call the meeting of the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee to order. And with me this afternoon so far, Senator Giesel, Senator Pascvan, and myself, Chair Dennis Egan. And we have two bills on the agenda for today. And first is Senate Bill 38, and sponsor is Senator Kevin Meyer. Senator Meyer, would you like to come forward and present, please? Or bring Christine with you.
I'm sorry?
Or bring...
Yes. Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, and members of the Senate Judiciary Committee.
Labor and Commerce.
So
close. Same room.
Gotcha. Okay, Labor and Commerce, that's where we're at. For the record, my name is Kevin Meyer. I represent South Senate District O. I'm here to present Senate Bill 38 for your consideration. Senate Bill 38 provides a one-time payment of $100,000 for a surviving spouse or dependent children of a peace officer or firefighter who dies in the line of duty. The benefit would come out of the pension funds, which already exist and that these folks pay into. And we do not anticipate that any new state dollars would be needed or necessary to fund this program. The beneficiaries of this benefit would be the firefighters, police officers, and others in similar position who pay into the PERS program. And that's the key. They have to be public safety officers who pay into the PERS system. This is a one-time benefit that would help families who must deal with a substantial loss of income, expenses, including funeral costs, travel, and the aftermath of the tragedy. And we are fortunate that not many firefighters and police officers die in the line of duty, but it does happen. And the last thing we want these folks to do if they're going into a burning house or they're rescuing somebody is to have to worry about, well, is my family going to be taken care of if I don't survive? So this protects those who put their lives on the line to protect us and our property. And if this passes, there would be funds for their survivors. We have folks here with the Alaska Professional Firefighters, Mr. Brian Parsh, as well as Mr. Barnhill is here from the Division of Retirement and Benefits. And we may have someone as well with the APD. So with that, Mr. Chairman and members of the Labor and Commerce Committee, we're available for any questions you may have.
Thank you, Senator. And we have been joined by Senator Davis. Okay. Questions for Senator Meyer or Christine?
Yeah, for the record, this is Christine Marsagan, my legislative staff.
Great. No questions, Senator. Thank you very much. We do have people online to testify. Brian Parch, Alaska Professional Firefighters Association. Brian, are you online?
Yes, sir, I am.
Okay. Would you like to testify, or are you just available for questions?
I'm just available for questions, sir.
Great. Thank you, Brian. Questions for Mr. Parch? Great. Thank you very much for standing by. And we also have locally Mike Barnhill from the Department of Administration. Mike. And we have been joined by Senator Menard as well. So we have a full committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mike Barnhill, Deputy Commissioner for the Department of Administration. I'm available for questions, but if you would like, Mr. Chair, I can take you through the fiscal note. Okay. In your packet is a fiscal note, and attached to that is a letter from Buck Consultants, the state's actuary. The reason why we go to Buck Consultants is there is a statutory requirement that when a bill impacts the state's retirement system, we get an actuarial analysis. It looks at the long and short-term impacts to the state and the impact of the bill to the actuarial soundness of the system, and that's AS 2408036. Because this bill would offer members of PERS, both the DB and the DC plan, a new retirement benefit. It creates a new unfunded liability. It's a modest amount, and it creates additional normal costs to the plan going forward. And you can see in the letter from Buck Consultants that the amount of those to the PERS DB plan is $140,000 for FY13, and it climbs up by fairly modest increments going forward. And then the same for the DC plan, creates additional costs of $35,000, and that climbs up going forward. What we've done is take those two figures from the Buck letter and sum them for the purposes of the fiscal note. So 140 plus 35 represents the $175,000 that you see from other fund source on the fiscal note. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Barnhill. Questions?
Thank you,
Senator Pascal.
What is the actuarial death rate? In other words, what I'm trying to do is understand is, you know, if you say under the DC it's 35,000 and under the DB it's something else. So kind of if you could walk me through that so that I understand that. And then kind of my follow-up question would be is, in the larger picture, how does that affect the normal cost rate to the base rate?
Through the chair, Senator Pascal, what you've just asked me to do is plumb the mysteries of actuarial science, and I'll take a stab at it. But if you want the accurate answer, we would have to get somebody from Buck online.
Trying to get it.
But I think what they do, generally speaking, is that they look at the experience of the plan in terms of what the historical payment would have been had it been in place for a number of years, and then just project that going forward. What that suggests to me is they think that, on average, this benefit would be tapped in the DB plan about once a year. I'm not certain that that has been the actual experience of this plan. It's possible, but there may be some element of caution in these numbers. And then slightly less for the DC plan, probably because the membership, at least at this time, is smaller.
Of the proportion of number
yes,
in the category.
Yes, exactly.
Sure.
Again, big caveat, not an actuary.
And then as far as the kind of the normal cost rate, I mean, is this minuscule? I mean, what's the...
Through the chair, yeah, it's a really small amount. When we're talking about a plan that, at least in the DB plan, we've got... $11 billion in assets, so $100,000 is a fairly small amount.
Further questions for Mr. Barnhill? And thank you very much, Mike. Good. Hopefully it'll never be utilized.
Absolutely.
Okay. Great. Thank you. Further questions for the sponsor or for anyone else? We have gone through folks willing to offer testimony, and that completes this. Do I hear Mr. Vice Chair?
No public. No one else is here.
There is no one else that has signed up to testify from the public, unless somebody hasn't signed the sheet. Seeing none, testimony is closed, and we will hear this bill and then hold it and take it up again, and hopefully fire this thing out of here. But that's Senator Meyer, thank you very much for presenting the bill. And the next to come forward is Senate Bill 67, Loan Funds, Charters, Mariculture, and Microloan, and it has a further referral to Finance. Deputy Commissioner Curtis Thayer and Juanetta Ayers, Director of Economic Development, will be the presenters.
Good afternoon. Thank you for being here. For the record, my name is Curtis Thayer, and I'm the Deputy Commissioner of the Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development. The Department of Commerce is on a mission to foster a business climate in the state that is conducive to job creation and economic growth. We have been actively and introspectively engaged in examining how we operate, and that's the same discussion we had approximately a year ago in this committee room. In an effort to be more responsive to the needs of the business community and deliver services that are relevant and useful to the private sector, recent realignment of resources and services within the department have bolstered the state's economic development toolbox and is helping us aggressively reassert the state's role in creating a business-friendly environment. We have spent a lot of time listening to the private sector. The Commissioner's Office recently formed the Economic Advisory Council, comprised of industry leaders from around the state, that has been instrumental in helping the administration plot a productive course towards economic development. Additionally, we have sought input from NGOs, trade associations, regional development organization, ARDRs, the CDQ groups, ANCSA Corporation, and legislators. A commonly heard theme has been to increase financing options for small business. Access to critically needed capital can be the difference between simply getting by and actually thriving. Senate Bill 67 is a step in the right direction. The proposed legislation would create a suite of three new revolving loan programs to be housed in the Department of Economic Development. One is to incentivize development of the sailfish mariculture industry, to assist Alaska charter operators in acquiring halibut permits in the new regulatory and management regime instituted by NOAA, and to seed micro-enterprise development across the state. The Commercial Fisheries Revolving Loan Fund would provide access to capital for Alaskan-owned charters, repatriate permits to Alaskans, and increase economic benefits to Alaska from this sector from a recirculation of earnings. And on this particular issue, just in the last week, the governor's office has had over 100 inquiries on just the issue of the halibut charters. The Mariculture Revolving Loan Fund would provide a spark for a growing industry with great year-round potential for coastal Alaska communities and entrepreneurs. Currently, there are 67 permitted farms in Alaska, but only 25 producing farms in 10 southeast and 15 south central communities. The Microloan Revolving Loan Fund would help small businesses grow by providing loans for startups, working capital, inventory expansion, and a variety of other commercial interests. Alaska is one of the few remaining states without a microloan program. Proven track records in other states have proved successful through the Small Business Administration. These programs would complement two existing small business loan programs administered by the Division of Economic Development, the Small Business Economic Development Revolving Loan Fund and the Rural Development Initiative Fund, both which were geared towards long-term financing. Small businesses are the number one creator of private sector jobs, so this legislation will help us in our efforts to spur sustainable economic growth in Alaska. It will be good for the economy and for the Alaskan families. Thank you again for your time today. Juanita Ayers is the director of the Division of Economic Development, and she can walk through the loan fund for you.
Thank you, Deputy Commissioner. Ms. Ayers.
Thank you, Chairman and members of the committee. I'd like to start with just stating that we are fortunate to have a very stable, responsible, and responsive banking community in Alaska that didn't participate in some of the actions that created a lot of economic uncertainty over the last several years. So we want to recognize that that is a benefit to our state and that they, in fact, are active small business lenders. Our role with the Division of Economic Development, with our financing activities, is to find those business startups to seed that kind of activity through the lending that we can do that the private lenders would not be able to do. And if anything, coming out of the last several years, even though they didn't participate in some of the activities that led to economic instability, they are now operating under the regulations and the oversight that resulted from those activities. So we have to live within this national framework that we're dealing with and try and create solutions that make sense here in Alaska. As Deputy Commissioner Thayer mentioned, this is a suite of three loan funds, and I can step through some of the specifics. I believe you have a detailed presentation that we can walk through, and please ask any questions as we go through the various funds. But they are the Commercial Charter Fisheries Fund, the Mariculture Revolving Loan Fund, and the Microloan Revolving Loan Fund. Each one has different features, and I can walk through each one of those. I do want to start off again by just saying that they are revolving loan funds, that the earnings, the repayments, and the fees will be retained within each fund and help build more funds for future loans, and that the operating expenses will be paid from the earnings of these funds. Deputy Commissioner Thayer went through some of the background that led up to the creation of this particular suite of funds that were the governor's putting forward, but we did receive a lot of private sector input and also worked with some of our other economic development partners on a local level and regional level, and this, we believe, are some of the things that will help some of our rural areas as well as also some of our urban areas that haven't been able to access the small business loan funds that we do currently have available. The Commercial Charter Fisheries Revolving Loan Fund, we believe, is important because of the change in the regulatory framework for...
I'm sorry, Director Harris, are you going through the sectional analysis right now?
I'm going through the presentation. Did you...
Okay.
Yes, I'm sorry.
That's fine.
Okay. The Halibut Charter Revolving Loan Fund really is precipitated by the change in the regulatory management regime for charter fishing, halibut charter fishing, in areas 2C and 3A in the Gulf of Alaska. And the requirement for a halibut charter permit was effective on February 1st of this year. NOAA estimated, based on logbook activity, that there were going to be 532 permittees, and they received over 800 applications for those permits. Right now, the permit prices are still being established in the marketplace, but a ballpark range is between $40,000 and $100,000 are the numbers that people are anticipating. So we think it's important in this regulatory change to provide access to capital for Alaskan charter operators so that we can repatriate as many permits as possible to Alaska, increase the level of resident participation in those fisheries, and realize the economic benefits of bringing those permits back to Alaska. The fund is proposed to be capitalized at $5 million. It would have a loan limit of $100,000. The term would be 15 years. And the interest rate may not exceed prime plus 2, but there's a floor and a ceiling on that at 3% with a ceiling of 10.5%. Moving on to the Mariculture Revolving Loan Fund. As was mentioned, we have currently 67 permitted farms in Alaska, with 25 of those producing. And those are spread between southeast and south central Alaska. We feel there's potential for growth, but obviously some of those 45 initial farms might be proved to be the borrowers for this particular fund and hope to move them into productive status. Mariculture is a relatively new industry in Alaska, but it's highly regulated. The Department of Fish and Game has a role through the Commercial Fisheries Division Mariculture Program. DNR has a role through the Aquatic Farm Lease Program. Department of Environmental Conservation has a role in their Food Safety and Sanitation Program. They have a shellfish section. And then also there are issues within the Alaska Coastal Management Program that may come to play with the mariculture development. Since 1990, we've had records for productive farms. In the most recent year, with complete data for 2009, the farm gate value was $473,000, a little over $473,000. And just anecdotally, some dozen years or so ago, I believe the British Columbia started actively trying to develop their mariculture industry, and they were at roughly the same level, and now it's a multi-million dollar industry for British Columbia. One other requirement of the Mariculture Loan Fund is a training requirement, and the reason that's included is we got feedback from the industry that they felt that that was an important component. And I wanted to share with you that there are a number of training resources available so that it's possible that's not a barrier to someone who might be interested, that there are training resources that are available through the university, through the Alaska Sea Grant and Marine Advisory Program. They have a number of different resources that are available there. There's also other collaborative research and resources that are available through other branches of the university, including the Fishery Industrial Technology Center, And the Alaska Shellfish Growers Association has had an EDA grant to write best management practices for the mariculture industry. So all of those resources are available. And as we move forward, and if it's successful in establishing this loan fund, our loan officers will work with potential borrowers to determine their experience in other areas that would bring transferable skills. So if they have time on the water, if they have a six-pack operator's license or a master's license or other activity that would bring them the skill set that they would need for this. But we feel that that's an important component. So the loan features are proposed capitalization of $3 million, loan limits of $100,000, terms for 20 years, and interest may not exceed prime plus one. The floor and the ceiling on that is 5 to 9%. And, again, this has a special feature, which is delayed repayment and then accrual. So that if it was a loan for 20 years, they're at the option of the loan officer, they may approve a delayed repayment and accrual schedule in the first 6 years. That's proposed because of the unique needs of the mariculture industry. When you're starting a farm, it could be a minimum of probably 3 to 4 years and sometimes as long as 6 years to develop your product and create a revenue stream. And so that's important. And the critical piece here is that you're maybe writing a 20-year loan, but the amortization happens from year 7 to year 20. So they'll have, you know, larger payments over the end of the life of that loan, but that time to build their business and be able to do that.
If I could ask you that. Yeah. If there's a delay, is there interest deferral or continued interest accrual, or is that within the discretion?
I think it's going to be both. I think both of those options, and it'll depend somewhat on the borrower, but it anticipates both in the way that it's written. I know that the committee has considered other microloan legislation this session, so I'm not going to spend a lot of time. I think you've heard the case for microloans, and it was there was a bill that made it through the House with a unanimous vote last session, and we ran out of time on the Senate side. So we're hopeful that, and we understand there's pretty widespread agreement that there's a need for a microloan. So I won't spend a lot of time on that other than to say that the legislation that's before you with SB 67 mirrors what the governor introduced last year. And, you know, we feel that there's widespread support for that. So,
thank you, Director Ayers. Questions from the committee?
Just thank you,
Senator Bernard.
Just a concern when we talk about that initial period of delay for 6 years, I struggle with that. And let me share. There's many different, and I know it's a 20-year, and I know about the interest and But as it accrues, but I feel that there's many businesses out there that want to be part of a small business loan. Mm-hmm. And when you delay up to 6 years, it almost becomes like an attitude, like how diligent am I in really, because I know I have 6 years out. And so just as one committee member, I'd like to see that shortened, and I know that's in the governor's bill, but could you speak to that and talk me out of that?
Through the chair, Senator Bernard, I know that we have some representatives from the mariculture industry here with us this afternoon that would probably be best to speak to that particular issue. What I can say with regard to lending practices would be that we have very savvy lending officers who have worked in predominantly in the commercial fishing industry and worked with borrowers with a range of circumstances. And we have one of the reasons that public financing works with regard to riskier enterprises is because we have the capacity to be patient. And so that is one of the things that we do to work through issues with borrowers and make sure that those loans are repaid to their highest and best purpose. There were the vast majority, dollar-wise, of our loan portfolios in the commercial fishing industry, and many private lenders, not because of the lack of compassion for the commercial fishing industry, but just because of the lending practices that they're subject to, would have written off loans that we waited out. We waited out with the industry and proved that we could collect on those loans, and that's continuing to be the case. So I would suspect with the mariculture industry, what we know going in is that that's their business model, and we're trying to structure that loan fund according to that business model.
Okay, I understand. I guess I'm just doing a little bit of a correlation real quickly in my brain with school loans, and they are delayed, and then that's why they're on the books, and they end up never paying it back. Mm. And so it is risky. Mm-hmm. It is risky. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Menard. Yes, Senator Passman.
Follow-up, thank you, Mr. Chair, is the follow-up to Senator Menard's question is that concept of the default rate, and I think that you were just kind of getting into that where you said that you had the patience to wait them out. What does that mean? And ultimately, when one addresses a concept of a default rate or the non-payment?
We have an extremely experienced lending and collections staff that have developed a great deal of expertise, particularly in the commercial lending or in the commercial fishing area. And what I would say is that our annualized default rate for last year was 0.6%. And within the fund, for example, we would anticipate, and we do cash flow projections, anticipating that there would be a certain level of default within each loan fund. For example, with our existing Small Business Economic Development Fund, last year the annual rate was 4.5%. Nationally, with the SBA last year for microloans, it was 4.8%. I think our performance is as good as or better than what you would expect to see, and particularly given the fact that we have a risky portfolio that's heavily weighted in an industry that typically isn't considered by private lenders.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Senator Pascal. Senator Giesel.
Hi, Juanita. I wondered, I'm looking at page 3 of the bill, line 21 through 27 for the halibut permit. And it looks pretty specific as far as residency. Physically reside in the state, remain here for 24 months, may not have declared residency in another state. I mean, you talked about repatriating these permits. Is this what you're relying on to bring these back to Alaska?
Through the chair, yes, Senator Giesel, that there, particularly in Area 2C, I regret that I don't have the numbers off the top of my head, but anecdotally I can tell you that there was a very high non-resident operator rate for in the charter industry in 2C, and it was, I believe, lower in 3A. As Deputy Commissioner Thayer mentioned, we have heard from a lot of folks who are being affected by this regime shift in management. But I can tell you that I've also heard from non-resident operators that are being affected by it and wanting relief from the state of Alaska on this. But it's a federally managed fishery based on an international treaty. And so that's why there is some non-resident participation. You know, we're interested in increasing economic benefits to Alaska, and being an Alaskan resident is a threshold requirement in our lending programs.
Mr. Chair, follow-up. So if the individual secures one of these loans and begins operations and then moves out of state after these requirements, these 24 months and so forth, does the permit revert back to the state? What happens?
Through the chair, Senator Giesel, it does not. There, I think, would be a number of U.S. constitutional issues, and I would say we'd need to have a constitutional attorney address it specifically to have a more detailed answer to that. However, what I can say with regard to our lending practices is that we have some good borrower incentive programs, a pay-on-time incentive program, and we are looking at what we can do that if over the life of any of our loan funds, or in any of our loan funds, if over the life of a loan, a borrower becomes a non-resident, if we can rescind those incentives. So that is a practice that I think we would like to, we've looked at it in particularly in our Comfish Revolving Loan Fund. So we are continuing to look at those issues, and I think we'll have a very specific proposal and something that we can do without any regulation or statutory changes.
Thank you. Further questions? Senator Pascan.
You know, I hadn't thought about this before, but is there any comparable, like UCC security interest that is attached to the license itself so that the state maintains, you know, so that if it goes into bankruptcy, that the state has this security interest in the license itself? Is that, or is that for these types of, these values of loans just too cumbersome? You know, I mean, just...
Through the chair, Senator Pascan, the this is a permit issued by NOAA, and so we are, again, a federal agency, and so we are somewhat hampered in that by the way they interpret the UCC and whether or not we can perfect a lien against a particular permits or assets that may be issued through that agency. We're actually continuing to work with them on some of those issues, but at this point I would say the easiest answer is at this time no.
And the reason that I bring that up, I know like in the area of liquor licenses, you know, there are if at the time of a transfer of a license the transferor can retain a security interest to the exclusion of others, and so here we have a transfer process. I'm just wondering if anyway, I'm just thinking out loud, just you know, trying to better understand.
Further questions for Deputy Commissioner Thayer or Director Ayers?
Just no, these,
Chairman,
I guess,
Ard.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, just for clarification. So these loans are made available if you're farming fish, like the frankenfish? No, they're not, because we promote and talk about it when we're going out into China all over that we have only wild fish. So I just want to make clear that these are not being made available to any enterprise that would be farming fish.
Through the chair, Senator Menard, the eligible purposes are shellfish, echinoderms, seaweeds, and algae.
Okay. Okay, thank you.
Just Senator Pascan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In B1, there's no inclusion of the word grant. And that's in B1 in all three articles. So is that just a drafting issue or?
Yes. Through the chair, Senator Pascan, yes. Actually, I believe comments from Senator Giesel in your earlier hearings on another bill pointed out that that was perhaps a drafting error, and I believe that there will be a CS coming forward to correct that error.
That's what I was, I just want to make sure we're not passing it out today or anything, but.
We're not passing it out today. Further questions for the two? Deputy Commissioner Thayer and Director Ayers, you might want to stick around for a little bit. Just in case there are further questions, we do have three people signed up to testify, and one to answer questions if we have any. First to testify here locally is Russell Dick, representing Sea Alaska Corporation. Russell, come forward, please. State your name and affiliation for the record, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the committee, my name is Russell Dick. I'm the president and CEO of Ha'ani LLC, which is a newly formed subsidiary of Sea Alaska Corporation. We have submitted some written testimony that we'd certainly like you to read. It provides more detail on what we're talking about today, so I'm going to try to just hit the highlights of our interest in this bill and why it's important to us. First, I'd like to say that, you know, we certainly applaud the administration's efforts to address impediments that we see to economic development in our rural communities. Ha'ani was created by Sea Alaska Corporation to address what we view as very fragile economic and social conditions in our rural communities and the communities that we represent. And so our charge is really to go out and look at opportunities to start fostering individual entrepreneurial activity within these rural communities. It's not as much about us being out here owning businesses on a regional scale. It's about getting into the communities and how can we be a catalyst to foster entrepreneurial activity, because our view is that that's the only way that these communities can be sustainable over the long term. Now, in my work in the last few months that I've been in this position, looking at different opportunities and getting out into these communities, you see impediment after impediment after impediment to economic development in these rural communities. And it's a critical issue that we have to address. And SB 67 is certainly an effective tool at removing what I believe is a very critical impediment to economic development, and that is access to affordable capital for those folks who decide to live in these rural communities. I like coming back on some of these issues of being risky capital and the terms of these loans. There's no question about it. For the last couple of years, we've kind of seen shellfish mariculture as an opportunity in our communities. We've got a lot of shareholders ourselves and residents who are very much interested in that particular activity. But again, it comes down to capital and workforce training. And to that extent, we have invested a significant amount of capital ourselves into developing this particular industry, looking at the infrastructure itself, workforce development. We've actually gone out and purchased some infrastructure around flupsies and providing seed to local growers here in the area, and that's our own contribution to this effort. Now, two areas that we've focused on initially have been Cake and Yakutat, and they are doing extremely well today. And we have two new small business oyster farms in Yakutat, a partnership in Cake, which again provides oyster seed to entrepreneurs, and really some vital on-the-job training and experience to build up that credibility within this industry. And as a result of the success thus far, you know, we're looking at expanding the program throughout a number of other communities, rural communities in Southeast Alaska. But again, we've got to recognize that this is risky capital. I mean, we're doing something, and we're doing it for a purpose, and that is to show the region, show the state, show the federal government, and show the residents within these communities that this is possible. All we have to do is get a little more creative and innovative about how we address some of these impediments that we face in these communities. So again, as we look at our apprentice growers, Senate Bill 67 becomes very, very important for them. We don't plan on continuing to invest in a significant amount of capital going forward. We'd like to see that come from other places, but we're certainly willing to do our part. And our apprentice growers are doing outstanding. And my view is if this is passed, they're going to be quite easily qualify for the types of loans that we see in this bill. With regards to the eligibility requirements in the 6 years, I think Mr. Painter will talk more about the expenses, but you know, what we see is not only capital infrastructure that will cost a new grower over $120,000+. You see operating expenses associated with that. You see living wages, those types of things, and those costs. We can get into impediments around permitting and those types of things. That starts to add up over time. And when you have a rural resident trying to get into this business and they can't sell one oyster for 3 years, you know, let alone be up to full scale to be able to make payments on their loan and those requirements, that becomes very difficult. And I think that 6 years certainly makes sense and allows them to get to a scale where they're able to support themselves as well as meet the covenants of these loans that are being provided to them. So with that said, Mr. Chairman, again, there's significantly more detail in what we've submitted today. We encourage the committee to move this bill along, and we're available to answer any questions you might have.
Thank you, Russell. Questions for Mr. Dick? Senator Pascrad.
Just an excellent presentation to you, Mr. Dick, but what's the definition of an apprentice grower as compared to used apprentice grower and growers? And so I'm just trying to understand your terminology.
Well, our view as an apprentice grower is somebody who's basically come in the door and said, look, I've taken a look at this. I'm willing to get into this industry. I know there's going to be some training and learning that I need to do, but it's from that point up until they're ready to go out on their own and do this. That's kind of how I view an apprentice grower.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Further questions for Mr. Tigg? Thank you very much, Russell. And next to testify is Roger Painter. Roger, come forward. I knew Roger before he had gray hair.
I still have a little brown down here.
Mr. Painter, welcome.
For the record, my name is Roger Painter, and I'm president of the Alaskan Shellfish Growers Association. And I've been an oyster and clam farmer for the past 25 years. Before I get started, I'd like to thank Governor Parnell and the administration for this legislation. I've been representing small business owners for the past 30 years, and this is the most significant effort I've seen the state do to help small businesses, and I'd like to applaud that. I have submitted to the committee, and I think they're in your packet, a letter dated February 4th that covers the legislation, and a position paper, two position papers, one called it's an economic development tool, and another that addresses in some depth the terms of the loan and the needs for those. I'd like to draw your attention to the one position paper where it lists some of the population costs, the economic development tool, the one called an economic development tool. It has some population figures for coastal Alaska in it. And I think if you go down that list, you'll see why people are real concerned about trying to create jobs in this region. And, you know, when you lose half of your population or more in 35 years, that's an economic and social crisis. And I think this legislation goes a long ways towards trying to address those. I think it's important to recognize how much support there is in the region for mariculture development. There's an incredible number of native corporations, economic development groups, local communities, and private entrepreneurs involved in trying to take away some of these barriers Mr. Dick was talking about. And certainly through all these efforts, certainly the thing that we've identified as the biggest impediment is the tremendous front-end costs and effort that's involved in getting these small businesses off the ground before revenues come in. It takes about a year to get your permits when you're getting a farm, and then it'll take you at least 3 to 4 years to get your first crops through, and another 1 to 2 years before you're really up on step with revenues. During this time, you're going to incur a tremendous number of expenses. The second position paper that addresses the need for the terms and deferrals and interest accruals gives a little detail about some of these costs you're going to face. And I think it's important to stress that during the startup period, not only are you facing these costs, but you're not getting any income. And once you start getting income, it's going to take you a while to recover from that loss of income for all those years. And so the interest and payment deferrals are a very important component of this legislation. I might mention, too, that these terms were really patterned after the state's existing private salmon aquaculture loan program, and these, again, the state's patience was greatly rewarded. If you go out and look at some of the studies on the contributions of the private salmon enhancement program, it's we're talking about $400 million a year in economic contributions. Now, I wouldn't claim that we're going to be doing that in 20 years, but I would like to stress that the goal here is to create businesses that will still be here 200 years from now. There are many oyster farms in the state of Washington that have been in business for 200 or even 300 years, and that's what we're trying to grow and foster here. I'd be pleased to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you, Roger. Questions for Mr. Painter? You lucked out. Thank you very much for your testimony. It's good.
Thank you, Senator.
And we have one more person signed up to testify. John Thade, you're just here to answer questions, is that correct?
That's correct. I'm in Anchorage.
Okay, great. Thank you. Mark Stern, Support Program Manager for Microloans. Mark?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Thank you for the opportunity to speak. Thank the committee.
Welcome.
I am the chairman of the Manufacturing Extension Partnership, which is a quasi-private partnership with the federal government and the state, and we've gotten strong support from the state of Alaska, and we appreciate that. I wanted to speak more specifically to the microloan portion of it, not the mariculture or the halibut charter portions of it, but more towards manufacturing and small business startups throughout the state. And I wanted to thank the department for its leadership in this regard. I've worked with the departments over the years, and I have to say that this current iteration of leadership has been exemplary. They've been very entrepreneurial. It's a bit out of our normal experience with the state to have people that are so focused on actually promoting business development and can see the needs that business owners actually have. We regularly hear about large corporations or native groups and the support that they receive, and they're a loud voice, and they can speak as a collective voice, and they get much more attention for small startups or for small businesses. And we hear this on a regular basis, that it is the backbone of the U.S. economy and an important component of Alaska's economy, and yet we quite often feel like we get lost in the shuffle because it's hard for us to extend a collective voice and press our need. And I just wanted to thank in a strong way the state department here of taking the initiative and pushing this sort of legislation, because I think it'll have a huge impact on the ability of small businesses to grow and continue to be an economic force in our state. I know it's exciting to talk about pipelines and native corporations doing big mining projects and that sort of thing, and those are critical. But I think if we have many, many small efforts creating jobs and people paying taxes, that that's a critical diversification that our economy can have. And I think it's a healthier situation, and not having all our eggs in any one basket, as I know all of you can appreciate, that diversification is very valuable. I think that this will go a long way to help businesses that struggle from time to time. I know there's a number of them that have been helped by the program that I chair, and quite often you feel like you're alone and no one's there to help, and that program has helped these people be able to move forward and grow their businesses, employ more people, and solidify their position in the business community. I think that these microloans, there have been instances here, certainly in the last 2 years, where I think good, sound business ideas were basically dismissed just because the answer was no. out of hand. I know that the Alaska banking community is different, and I've experienced a good relationship with banks here. I know others have sometimes been frustrated because banks have disappeared and they didn't have a long-term relationship that they could fall back on. I think that this would be a great option for people that are maybe outside of the normal criteria that's required to establish some loans. And I think that from what I'm hearing from Director Ayers, that there's some safeguards, and I think there should be mechanisms to ensure that the state doesn't become a charitable organization. Business is for real, and you need to play by the game and the rules of that game, regardless of where that money comes from. And so I applaud those safeguards. Thank you very much for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you, Mark. Questions for Mr. Stearns from the committee. Mr. Stearns, thank you very much for your testimony. John, I'm sorry if I'm sure I'm going to mispronounce your name. Thied?
That's great. It's Thiede. That's fine.
Okay. Sorry. And you're Aqua Farm Manager for DNR. Are there questions for you from any member of the committee?
There are no questions from me, thanks. Unless
John,
has questions.
I think you're off the hook.
Okay.
Hey, thanks for thanks for taking the time.
Thank you.
Okay, further questions for either Deputy Commissioner Thayer or Director Ayers before we Senator Giesel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm not sure who to ask this question to, but you can assign it to someone. When we heard this microloan bill a couple days ago, there was a banking executive here who wanted a turndown provision. And I don't see that in the governor's bill. I don't know how relevant that is.
Deputy Commissioner Thayer.
We are working with the banking industry on that subject. We had talked to bankers in Anchorage who did not want to see a turndown provision in it because it would create non-revenue work for them, for customers walking in, going in to get a turndown just so they can apply for a loan. However, after the testimony, we are kind of going back to the Bankers Association, and you might see a CS in a different version where that's incorporated in it. So internally, there was a little bit of disagreement, and that's what we're trying to sort out within their organization.
Great. Thank you.
So, Deputy Commissioner, so we're in our because we are already we're going to get a CS, so we're going to get two items maybe.
Correct.
In this new CS.
We're working that one. Like I said, the bankers in Anchorage do not care for one. Mr. Dahl would like one, and so they're working it out, and we will get back to you. Last year they did not want it. So.
Great. Thanks, Deputy Commissioner. Thanks, Senator Giesel. Further questions as long as the Deputy Commissioner is at the table? Seeing none? Senator
Chairman,
Bernard.
Conceivably you could make the argument that it could be viewed where a particular bank or several banks, they just get inundated because it's really quick. They want to get in there and get refused, and then, you know, this is a lot of downtime for them. However, there could be a possibility that they had wiggle room and that they could even make them a better loan than this proposed legislation would. Is that incorrect of me thinking that?
That's a possibility, and that is also something our loan officers would look at when they look to evaluate a loan, where maybe it is better at a commercial institution rather than with the Division of Economic Development.
I was looking at the banking.
Because, again, if I may, as a follow-up, you know, there's many, many credit unions out. I'm just thinking in my area. And depending what your credit rating is or whatever, and they're starting to negotiate more because they do want to be involved in small businesses and making loans, even if it's, you know, say you have a money market for like 3%, and they tap into that and see what you're. So I'm just not totally buying that it would be just a revolving. I'm in here, hurry up and sign this, give evidence that I talked to you and showed you my business plan, and so I can go to the state and get this money. You know, so I'm glad that you're stepping down those kind of gently and are going to relook at that and then maybe do a possible siesta.
The one thing is the Division of Economic Development by no means wants to compete with the private sector.
Correct.
We're trying to find that middle ground where it's not quite commercially viable, yet it is something that will benefit the small businesses in Alaska. And so we're just trying to find that middle ground. And like I said, for the most part, we have done that. We have the turndown provision, like I said, that internally some would like it, some would not. And we're open to discuss with the industry what is best for them.
Okay. Thank you.
Sorry, through the chair.
Thank you, Senator. Thank you, Deputy Commissioner. Thaya Shab, representing the banking industry. Ms. Shab, would you like to? Okay.
Thaya Shab, lobbyist for the Alaska Bankers Association. I'm sorry I wasn't signed up to testify, but I wanted to make a couple of comments. We had a Alaska Bankers Association conference call again today, and a week ago at our conference call, we were directed, there was quite a bit of interest expressed in having a turndown provision that got reinforced today. We also talked a lot, and I brought this up because I had heard about people coming in, and you don't want it to be a perfunctory, you know, just, okay, turned on. Mm-hmm. If they want people to come in and apply for a loan, not just say, give me a letter, you know, saying they will not be doing that. Apparently, you know, maybe years and years ago, there was some of that that happened, but it's not happening now. They're very interested, as you heard from Mr. Dahl on Tuesday, they're very interested in loaning to small business. Do all small businesses qualify, especially startups? Not always. And it is very good to have an alternative to go to. It's good for them to have a list of places to go to. Last year we were neutral on the bill. We had disagreement among our members whether to support it or not. I think we're getting closer to a point to support it. We just need, you know, to get everybody comfortable. We also had we're going to have a change of presidents for our association, and Joe Beadle has been nominated, who I know has a good association with the department, and I think that we're going to move forward and hopefully get to the point where they're not just neutral on the bill but supporting. And if you had any questions, I'd be happy.
Great. Thank you, Ms. Shab. I appreciate your testimony. Are there any questions for Ms. Shab? Senator Pascan.
As you progress towards this hoped-for, expected, enthusiastic support for the bill, what's the time schedule? I mean, you know, they're talking about a CS. You know, I think there's some interest in moving this bill forward. So what should we be considering as far as the timeline?
I'm going to be, and I have had conversations with the Department of Commerce, and we're going to work with them and see if we can't get something similar to what we did with Senator Wielichowski's bill. I'm also working on a possibility of, I'm going to be helping to draft a letter of support for Wielichowski's bill and see if I can get everybody to agree.
Perfect.
Small business is very important to the banking industry. It's important to all of us. The economic development engine that starts with small business is very important for our whole state, and they are interested in things that help out small business. But they just want the first bite at the apple. They're in business, you know?
Thank you, Ms. Shub. Further questions, Senator Pascan?
Okay.
Senator Menard.
Okay. No, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just another consideration when they're going in, and if we did have that turndown provision, perhaps they're making introductions. They might say, well, as long as I'm here, I'll open up a savings account or buy a treasury bond. Or, you know, I mean, there's opportunities there for the banking industry, even though they walk through the doors and they're just kind of wanting this turn. But there are other services that a bank has. And once you build a relationship, you might want a side savings account put away, and so I see that as an opportunity. So I see it
absolutely
as complementing this, and that's all I'll say.
Mm-hmm.
Turn down.
Further questions? for Ms. Shub? Seeing none, thank you very much, Thais.
Thanks so much.
Director, come forward. Director Ayers.
Thank you.
Then we'll wrap it up.
Thank you, Chairman. Yes. I just wanted to add one point, which is just to amplify something that Senator Menard just pointed out, which is, you know, our goal in seeding new businesses is that these will become customers for future loans with private lenders, for financial services with private institutions. And we already have a partnership with private lending with regard to our loan activities as well as SBA, and we're trying to incorporate USDA loan funds in this as well, which is we give them what we call the cheat sheet, but it's a laminated summary of all the loan funds that are available through our programs, through SBA, and private lenders can refer business to us as we refer business back to them. So there's a symbiotic relationship.
Great. Thank you, Ms. Ayers. Questions as long as she's still at the table? Seeing none. Okay, that completes testimony on Senate Bill 67. We expect to have a CS coming before shortly, and we'll take action on that. And also Senate Bill 38, the police and firefighters' death benefits, will be coming back before us. And both of those pieces of legislation have a further referral to the Finance Committee. Seeing nothing else coming before the committee, it's adjourned at 2:31.
All right. Here you go, Dennis.